K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. At this time, we begin the sick net. As we've done 1,622 times before. So this is TechNet number 1,622. Main purpose of the TechNet, you guys have heard it so often, is to gather those who are curious about radio, want to know more about how it works, how to make it work better, their radio equipment. The fact that it gives you action at a distance. A couple of watts or a couple of milliwatts of RF energy put into an antenna allows you to communicate with somebody a mile away, or in some cases 10,000 miles away. How it does that is kind of magic. There's a lot of highfalutin theory in there, so to speak, but it doesn't have to be taught that way, in my opinion. The guys who are curious will gather at the TechNet Sunday night, 8 o'clock, and teach each other how their radio equipment works, and what they've done that worked and what didn't work. Let me drop. Not everything you hear on the TechNet is 100% accurate. No one promised that. But by way of the peer review process, by that I mean the last 10 years of the TechNet are recorded at the website of Mike Perry, KC2NJI. You go there by going to www.amateurradio.tangovictor. Choose the right year, the right month, and the right week, and 4 hours worth of material becomes available to you. 2,000 hours of TechNet are recorded on that website. 10 solid years. And the first few years of it are even documented as to what subject is being discussed every 5 or 10 minutes, with cross-referencing, where you can say, I want to know about a such and such kind of antenna. And in the earlier years, that was cross-referenced. Mike, of course, couldn't keep that up forever. He's a family man, so all of that documenting didn't take place. But by way of that website, when we make errors, as we do occasionally, we, meaning me, John, and Paul. John is KC2WGB, the guy who runs the mailbag, monitors Echo Link and IRLP in the chat room. And Paul, WS2N, is the guy who gives us the space report every week. Good job. So those three people are being monitored by way of that website, and when we make errors, as we occasionally do, somebody will listen to that and report it to us, and we correct the error, it says here. Another one of the websites that supports the TechNet is the one by Mike M2, K1MJF. That you'll find at limarktechnet.com. And there you'll find articles, pictures, graphs, and so on, other material that supports the TechNet. Tonight, we're going to be running a very interesting experiment, because a good fraction of the world is going to be listening to the presidential debate at 9 o'clock. I'm very curious to find out, will anybody be on the TechNet beyond 9 o'clock? Let me drop. Because of a high percentage of the population being called away for the presidential debate, the possibility exists that there'll be nobody around except Dick, John, and Paul, and everybody else will be gone. And we'll survive that. It's possible. Now, the usual week, the loose schedule that we follow, is that during the first hour we take people who check in because they do have a question or a comment for the net. They give us their call letters, their name, and we take them in order. Need that sign in just because you're listening. After 32 years of TechNet, we started in 1982. 34 years, let me think now. 1982 to now? I guess it's 34 years. After 34 years of TechNet, over 5,000 hours worth of it, by now we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. For the first hour, we take those questions, and I say the first hour. I use those words loosely. Let me drop. There's a whole lot of people with a whole lot of hot questions. We go way beyond an hour. And if there's very few people who sign in with questions, it could be less than an hour. And then at an earlier time, we'll switch over to the mailbag. And the mailbag is where John, KC2WGB, collects the people's communications because they have not the right license yet or not the right equipment so they can talk to us directly. And Sean chooses some number of those submittals, and we discuss those questions. That's followed by Paul, WS2N, our space expert, and he'll be giving us tonight space report number 222 of the series, by which you'll find out what's the latest at NASA and the other space agencies around the world. What are they doing? We get quite a bit of a positive mail from people who really enjoyed that section of the space report, because... it's my belief that a true radio amateur is a curious person who has a scientist inside that's trying to get out. And so that science interest involves radio, space, cosmology, astrophysics, all kinds of things. The subjects that are appropriate for the TechNet are almost any subject of interest to ham radio operators. And that includes quite a few subjects. There was a period of time in which we had a couple of astronomy questions being asked, and people objected that they didn't want to listen to the TechNet anymore because they didn't want to listen to astronomy. Thank goodness those people have softened their opinion. And so astronomy is another a real fun type hobby, which can be combined with ham radio. Okay, we're going to take check-ins at this time. A good sign-in would sound like this. KC2SHO, Jonathan, and yes. So give me your call letters, your name, because you do have a question or a comment, and please do that right now. K2RIW listening.
Listening to yourself, you're motivating.
With a question.
W2OIY, Joe, yes.
82HUC, Steve, and yes.
Okay, I've heard Rich, Joe, and Steve. Now, Eric said that I'm motorboating. Eric, are you sure? I'm listening to myself coming back. I'm also listening to myself on 975-375, where the audio is much too loud and harsh. But at least it's there. I'm not hearing the motorboating. Let me think now.
I'm not hearing it either, Dick.
So, Eric, you said I'm motorboating. In other words, you're hearing a little bit of sound in the background, is what I think you're saying. Stand by a minute. Let me tap on this thing. I've just hit my calibrated fist on my radio, and a little bit of sound I hear in the background. Is that what you're talking about, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RAW.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe a fan or something. It's a very constant. You know, I can play it back for you if you want to hear it. You should be able to hear it yourself. It's maybe 15. Is that any audio?
Okay, the way I've got this radio arranged, I guess that's part of what could be doing it. We'll put a pad in here, which maybe will lower the vibration. Has it gone down a little bit, Eric? Go ahead.
That's exactly the same.
It's exactly the same. Okay. When you get a chance, play it back to me. I want to hear what you hear. Okay, so once again, we've got Rich, Joe, and Steve signing in so far. Anyone else who has a question or a comment, who thinks they're going to be able to listen to the TechNet beyond 9 o'clock tonight when the presidential debate starts, give me a call. That is right now. K2RIW.
Yes, I'm Rich. Comment, yes.
Okay, Mr. GXM, Rich. Your audio is a little bit low. What is your prefix there, Rich?
WB2, Whiskey Bravo 2, Golf X-Ray, Mike. Just saying, I'll listen to you instead of Bill and Don and Hillary. You guys talk over each other a lot less than they do. Comment out, Mike.
Very fine, Rich. And thank you for that.
Ooh.
I'm now hearing the motorboating sound a little bit louder. Yep. Looks like my rig is starting to give me a failure of its fan. I'm going to have to clean its fan. Okay, let's start off with Rich first. N2EO. K2RIW, Rich. K2RIW. Rich number one is EO, and Rich number two is me. Go ahead, sir, Rich number one.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. That's for Pequot Park. Yeah, Dick, the question is, I'm trying to get, hopefully by next spring, I want to have more gain, some gain in my antenna system. You know what I got now? You helped put it up. It's, 0 dB gain. The reason I'm looking for gain, I'm trying to run slow scan television on 20 meters. Hopefully the signal will get stronger as we get to winter. But right now, signals are not strong enough to get a good picture. And I'm wondering, I also like 40 meters. 40 and 20. Is there any way to put up a pair of phased verticals to shoot east and west? I want to do this in the spring. I got plenty of time to think about it. I don't know if I could use a phasing harness or two parasitic elements, and maybe being at 40 and 20 are harmonically related, be able to use like quarter wave verticals on 40, half wave on 20. What do you think, Dick Antonio?
You are currently connected to reflector 9126.
You've got a nearly full-size dipole because N2EO and I saw the thing with our own eyes as it was being installed, and Barry, as such, you do have 2.14 dB of gain. A dipole, a nearly full-size dipole, and even a fraction of a dipole, impedance matched, will give you 2.14 dB of gain. The amount of signal strength you put to a station at some further distance away is a function of the gain of the antenna, the altitude of the antenna, where the antenna is aimed. If you had more gain than you've got right now, you're either going to have to mechanically rotate it or electronically rotate it. Yes, two elements, there's various ways you can put up two elements. You can put up two dipoles. In other words, two dipoles parallel to the one you've got right now. Yeah, now I'm hearing some rumble in the background. And by way of two separate feed lines going to those two separate dipoles and a switching arrangement in the shack, you could favor east-west or north-south, so to speak. East-west or north-south, depending on the orientation. East or west. You could favor the east direction or the west direction, depending on which one you phase ahead and which one you phase behind. And a pair of dipoles would give you a healthy 4 or 5 dB more gain. So without adding altitude and without adding a mechanical rotator, which I don't think you're not willing to put up an 80 meter or 40 meter rotatable antenna. Two dipoles, whether they be vertically polarized, and a quarter wave or a half wave or horizontally polarized, that's your choice. But a pair of dipoles at a reasonable
repeater, timeout.
At a reasonable distance with two separate feed lines would give you the ability to put out more signal in the end fire direction of those two dipoles or monopoles, and you'd be able to select whether or not they go to the east or the west, if you know what I mean. So without a great big investment, wire is cheap. And I think you've got more trees on your property. And by the way, the dipole doesn't have to be parallel to the ground. The fact that one of your dipoles is parallel to the ground and the other one is set up as an inverted dipole, and they look like they're unrelated, the RF wave doesn't give a darn. It wouldn't care a bit. You've got one purely horizontal dipole right now, and let's assume that on the western side of your property, you had a single tree that could serve as a support, and you make an inverted V from there with the two ends of the dipole being tethered back down to the ground. Can we drop? That would give you a two-element phased array. And don't worry about the fact that two of those elements are one of those elements is inverted V and the other one's a pure horizontal. So by putting more wire in the air and properly feeding it, you could make your signal a healthy 4 or 5 dB stronger than it is right now, which is more than twice power, probably around 3 times the power in the desirable direction. So without a big investment, with the constraints I know that you've got on your property, I think that's a possibility, Rich. N2EO, K2LIW and TechNet.
Okay, Dick, we'll have to investigate this further. What do I use, quarter wave phasing harness, or I think one of them has to be, what, an eighth wave ahead of the other?
How much you put one ahead of the other is primarily a function of the spacing you've got between the two. An ideal spacing between the two would be quarter wave, in which case, if you had your second dipole, let's assume that it's an inverted V, further to the west of your current dipole, and you were able to mount it a quarter wave away on, let's say, 40 meters, quarter wave away on 40 meters would be 32 feet. So the dipole that's 32 feet ahead, because it's a quarter wave further ahead, would have to be fed a signal a quarter wave late. You'd have to put a quarter wave of extra cable going to the most western dipole. The funny thing about a phased array is they always fire in the direction of the delay. It's opposite of common sense. So if a signal going to your more western inverted V dipole goes to a quarter wavelength longer piece of line, that will give it a quarter wave of delay. Spatially, it's displaced a quarter wave, and now you'll create a great big forward load to the west and almost a null to the east. You'll subtract the signal that used to go to the east, you'll be switching it off to the west. So a phased array fires in the direction of the delay. N2EO, K2LAW.
Okay, Dick, you're giving me some good information, food for thought. I have to get permission from the boss, you know, the boss is Patty, to string a dipole, another dipole in the backyard. But, could this be made to work two bands, namely 40 and 20?
Absolutely. And your current open wire fed dipole like thing, I believe it covers 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10. Isn't that true, Rich? Go ahead. With a good antenna tuner?
That's correct, Dick. It's open wire line. It does.
And by the way, your neighbors aren't going to give you any flack if you put up another antenna. Most human beings do not see wire. We amateurs tend to put a lot of wire in the air, and they don't see wire. Obvious by the fact that every 150 feet down every domestic street, you've got utility poles and all kinds of wires on them. We don't even see that anymore. A person from Europe comes to the United States where they've got primarily underground wiring, and they ask us, how do you people in the United States put up with such ugliness of all that wire in the air? The answer is we don't even see it. So you can add as much wire in the air as you want, in my opinion. Your neighbors won't give you any flack. And there's ways you can talk to people in the house into accepting it. So can you operate in multiple bands? Yes. The phasing harness becomes a little bit more complicated, but that's just a matter of the right kind of a switching right network, the right kind of a power divider, and the right pieces of length of cable that are thrown in and taken out, depending on which band you are, in order to give you this directionality. So that's going to give you the biggest bang for the dollar, because another piece of wire in the air with the right kind of feed line going into it, all being fed by, let me drop it.
I DeLaw token F10 able.
All being fed by an antenna tuner. It'll work like a charm. As I said, you'll get 4 or 5 dB of extra gain in the desirable direction. and to electronically steer it is a lot smarter. To try to build an 80 or 40 meter high gain rotatable antenna, I think, is out of the question for you. Back to you for any clarification here, Rich. N2EO, K2IW.
Okay, Dick, we'll have to talk more about this in the future. Like I say, I got a lot of time to next spring to do it. So I don't know which way.
The Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Come over me, Dick.
No, don't worry. Your voice is there continuously, Rich, so we heard you continuously. Okay, the next person on the list was Steve, KD2HUC. Go right ahead, Steve, K2RIW on TechNet.
I was next on the list, not Steve.
You're very right. Go ahead, Joe, W2RYY. I wrote your name in the wrong place, I goofed. You got it, Joe.
I'm looking for a device that will be able to take the video out from a DVD player and introduce it into the USB input of a computer system. I want to be able to play a video that has, more like a movie type of image. It's not pre-recorded, not pre-recorded stuff, but just, you know, over camera. I want to be able to take that, video that's playable and be able to store it in a computer and eventually put that to a flash drive. Does anybody know, do you or anybody else know of a device that exists to do that? Because the DVD itself will not play directly on the computer. It's, even though I tried formatting the disc to make it compatible with other DVD-type devices, it still does not want it to work correctly. But I can play it on the player I have and get video output from it. Back to you.
Yeah, I certainly don't know that one. I'm very light on computers. If my son was available, KB2IQN, there's a chance he could answer them. Hey, Eric's going to give you the answer. Go right ahead, Eric.
No, I wasn't listening that closely, but it sounds to me like you want to make a file out of a DVD. Is that correct?
Yes. The DVD can only be played on one machine. It can't be, I tried finalizing the disc to make it compatible for other DVD players, and they don't recognize the disc. So what I end up having is I can have video output available from this player. I want to take that and introduce it into a computer somehow, some way, to be able to store it on a hard drive.
If I understand correctly, Joe, you didn't repeat it for Eric. Is it only the audio you're interested in, or is the audio and the video that you want transferred? Over to you, Joe.
The DVD just has video on it. Audio is disconnected to wasn't necessary, it just has video. It's off a remote camera.
You got it, Eric.
Okay, so the source DVD you're trying to copy is not like a commercial movie or anything like that, right?
Correct, homemade video.
Okay, and have you tried copying the disc and you don't get a playable disc, is that it?
I've tried going through the process of what you can do with the disc that's called finalizer to make it compatible, so to speak, to be playing on the DVD player. It won't do that. I have another separate just DVD player only from a different manufacturer. It won't play on that DVD player. So what I have is this DVD will play on other devices that are the same from the same manufacturer as where the original source was recorded to, which happens to be a Mitsubishi a VCR, DVD, player, recorder type of unit. They'll play on all three of those, but it won't play on the DVD player, so I don't think it'll play on a computer's DVD, CD-ROM, the DVD player on a computer. I don't think it'll play on that. I haven't tried it to exactly see that, but it doesn't play on the DVD player. So, okay, so more than it doesn't work, what I have available is video out from this player. Is there a way of taking that video out, converting it to something that could be stored on a computer or
You got a number of options available for you. What land of computer do you live in? PCs or Mac?
PC, Windows 7.
All right, that makes it harder. Mitsubishi is known to do a lot of really strange things. By the way, anything that you try to copy that's got DMCP or copy protection on it, it's not going to work. It sounds like the disk that you're getting out of there, Mitsubishi, is not finalized at this point. Nobody else will play it. I don't know if you've got a program like Loxio, which will actually let you finalize a disk. It does seem to allow you to finalize disk across platforms. If that's actually not the case, and they're doing something wonky, which is highly possible, over the years, various different products they've sort of like wanted to keep it in their own family. And did some things that are sort of strange, but I don't know, that's the way they approach it. So let me let it drop, and I'll give you a simple answer. You can go to the Micro Center and actually literally buy a digitizer that's in the form of a USB stick. Hop Hog, which is actually an Hop Hog, they make a bunch of them. You know, you're looking at like $70, $80. You can get it as a plug-in card. There's a number of things like a Canopus box, which will take components and composites. The reason why I mention that is because if you do want to copy an uncopyable commercially pressed DVD with copy protection on it, you can get around the copy protection by using a component out and going in that way. From the Canopus box, you can make an MPEG converter with it. You can make MPEG files. You might try, if you were a Mac person, there's a program called Handbrake that I haven't found anything. It's not been able to take apart and actually turn it into a file that you can use a quick time over here, something like that. But there are quite a number of products that you can fit stick both standard definition and high definition into, and it will create a file for you of your choice. So, I mean, the answer's simple. There's a lot of that stuff out there, and there's no real big mystery. If you just want to copy the disk, there is a format that makes it easy. Let it drop again. Where you can actually copy the BOB file onto another file, and then using a program like Loxio, install them there, and then create it in DVD, utilizing that video. So, you know, it's got a number of options, no matter which way you want to go.
The one item you mentioned was Hop Hog Video. What is that? That's a company that makes devices to like as an interface to go between one to another. This is also a Mitsubishi type of player, and they do have the availability of finalizing a disc. I've done that already, and I've taken the disc and put it in another DVD player, and a much older one called an Apex. It's about 15 years old. It plays CDs and other various things like that, as well as DVD stuff, but it won't play it. That player doesn't recognize the disc. It says it's like no disc. So this thing will pretty much play on like Mitsubishi players that I have. But I want to be able to take that video, which is video only, no audio, and store it into my computer, where I can later retrieve and put it into a, play it or put it onto a flash drive for storage purposes. And it's not a commercial video. It's something I took off a camera in my house.
No, I got you. You did mention that the DVD player you tried to play it on 15 years old. Tracking and things like that has gotten better over the years. So you might try something more modern, or if you've got a DVD ROM drive, which has a later version of the pickup, you may find that actually some other devices will play the finalized disc back. It's not finalized, nothing's going to recognize it at all.
Dick, I tried to, I didn't try actually putting that disc in the computer. I can do that, but I assume since it wouldn't play on the other DVD player, I wouldn't recognize the disc. The DVD drive on my Win 7 computer may not recognize. recognize it all, so I can try that later on and see if it does. All right, say it does recognize it and it's able to see that, play what's on the disk. What would be the process of taking that and storing it to a file? You call it the VOB file, or that's part of the video file?
Yeah, if you read the disk, you'll find that it consists of actually two folders. One says video TS, and one will say audio TS. 9 out of 10 times, you'll find the audio TS is empty. But in the video TS file folder, you'll find programs in there. You'll find other files that are called something dot VOB, Victor Ocean Bravo, and there'll be a .ifo file, and then there'll be a bunch of MPEG files. You can actually copy them over to a directory. That is, if you can read the disk in a reader, in a computer. But it sounds like you're not going to get that far. If you can do that, you can actually reconstruct it, take it apart, and put it together however you want. For the appropriate program, like Rock Show, there's a few others out there. And there's a few free ones, too, so go look for them. But if you've got tracking error problems where the mechanics of the recording device is off a little bit, you may have difficulty reading it back. Now, let me just explain one thing about CDs and DVDs that most people won't realize when they drop again. A recordable DVD or recordable CD actually has a track inscribed in it. There's a laser that actually splits up the beam into two different actual outputs. There's two lasers in the recorder. There's a 640 nanometers red laser, which essentially reads the lead track. And then that controls the recording laser, which places the actual track that you're going to be recording the information on, which is in the essence in between the two lead tracks. And the alignment of that can actually go off. Older types of DVD players and CD players will have difficulty reading it. It'll actually start mistaking the lead track for the actual information data. So I'll give you a little clue as to some of the problems that exist. K2RIW, send it back to you, K2CHAT.
Now, there was a company in Hapag that was making these dongles that you could plug into a laptop, which would allow you to watch digital over the television. I think it was called Hapag Computer Works. And you called it Hapag Video. I wonder if that's the place you're referring to, Eric. And I wonder if they have a product that you think would help Eric. Help us, Joe. K2EJ, K2RIW.
You call it Hapag MiniWorks. Their original name is Hapag Inc. And I didn't say it was Hapag Video. I said Hapag makes a video card. They also make goggles. You know, USB. I actually have one in my bag right here that I use. They make them in various different forms. They take VCD over the air. They'll take video. They'll take component video. Depends upon which model you buy. They have this little dongle that's got an RF connector on it. They've got plug-in ports. It's got all the connectors on it. So, you know. They're one company. There's another one called iGo. Another one, ITV. You know, you look, there's a whole lot of them. I tend to use the commercial stuff like Canopus. A few others that are a little more expensive, Blackmagic. They're a higher quality in terms of their ability to digitize and make a nice, pretty picture. What he's doing is he's going to demodem by going from MPEG down to analog video, and he's going to remodem by going analog video back to data, MPEG, whatever file format he chooses to record it on. So you've got to expect that it's not going to be lost with one.
Do you have any final questions along these lines, Joe? system, H-U-L-Y-Y, K-2-L-A-W, the tech net.
No, not at this time. I can look up on the web and find out what Hop Hog Inc. has to offer. I can also contact Micro Center and maybe ask for their help and see if they have something along the lines of what I'm looking for. They may have something easily available, readily made that they carry, rather, you know, somewhat inexpensive.
You know, you can just do a Google search for video digitizers. All of them, all the different brands and prices and specs will come up.
Okay, sounds great. WHYY, back to net.
And in the next week or two, Joe, please check back with us and let us know how that effort worked out. Okay, now I believe the next person on our list is Steve, KD2HUC. Go right ahead, Steve. K2RW in the second half.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Dick, my question tonight is involving a tube amplifier. I managed to get my hands on, I'm now the proud owner of a Ameritron AL-80A, which obviously I got used. When I powered it up, it looks like I may have had a problem with the filter cap, so I'm changing them. I have the new, old ones out, and I'm going to put the new ones in. My question is, how important is it? I read a bunch of stuff on the internet, and I wanted to kind of separate fact from fiction. How important is it to form these before you put them in? And is there any, you know, should I take them up to rated voltage if need be? The amplifier, this particular amplifier does not have, when it's in standby, does not kill the high voltage. So, so basically, as soon as I turn it on, whether it's in standby or operate, it's powered up with the high voltage right on the tube. So that's my question. Do the caps really need to be formed, or can I just put it in and turn it on? KD2HUC, back to net.
I know you guys are hearing a very strong, approximately 1 kilohertz note, because Steve is coming in by way of the 975-375, and that squeal in there is one of the things that's being worked on. Out of curiosity, Steve, are you sure you don't have any ability to get in tonight to the repeater on 2585? The machine seems to be in reasonably sensitive mode, so on 146.25, you would come through without a tone. So give me a quick break on that one, Steve, and then we'll continue with your question. KD2HUC, K2RIW in the tech net.
You know, if you give me a... Thank you. If you give me a second to rearrange things, I can kill that.
Okay, you said if we give you a few minutes. Do you want us to be quiet for a couple of minutes, Eric? K2VJ, K2RIW.
No, the reason why I need the time is because what I'm going to do is turn off one tap and turn on another, which is going to take about a minute.
Possibly we're hearing a tone because the two paths are meeting against each other. Is that maybe what's going on, Eric? Go ahead.
No, actually. To make a long story short, there's a card in the link repeater, in the link transceiver, that is actually listening to itself. That's why you hear the feedback. There's a bad card in there. Just I haven't had the opportunity to go drive another 40 miles to fix it.
It sounds like you have the ability to remotely control that card and therefore go from card A to card B, which doesn't have the self-listening function. Is that roughly what's going on, Eric? Can I go ahead?
Nope. Not what I'm going to do. I'm changing the path through the internet as opposed to a path over the air. It's the path over the air that's causing the problem, so I'm going to put it on the other path and you'll have to deal with this delay.
And we can deal with that. There was a time when the main repeater, 2585, used to have a built-in delay, and I always operated in a duplex mode. I can hear what's coming back out of the machine. and I had to teach myself to be able to talk when I'm hearing my own voice coming back with delay. Okay, when it comes to electrolytic capacitors, Steve, whether or not they need foaming is primarily a function of how long has it been since high voltage has been placed on them. If you've got, let me pick a number, 450 volts, I'm going to pick a number, 50 microfarad, 150 microfarad capacitors, whatever value they are. But if no 450 volts has been put on there for 2, 5, 10 years, then the chances of them doing some funny things the first time you're powering them up is significant. What I think people do is they don't put the maximum voltage, they put some reasonable amount of voltage. In other words, if it's a 450 volt capacitor, and you put, let me pick a number, 50, 100, 150 volts on it, and let that voltage sit there for some number of hours, it is my belief you have reformed those capacitors, and after that they'll take the full voltage with no grief. Correspondingly, if a capacitor of that kind has been sitting on the shelf for 10 years, and you immediately hit it with its rated voltage, 450 in my example, there's a medium good chance it'll do some kind of internal arcing and possibly some internal damage. That's my understanding of the reforming process of electrolytic capacitors. Of the guys who are listening to my voice right now, if you've got further information that Steve is asking for, please give us your call letters right now, and then we'll go to you for your additional information. Correct me, in other words, I'm not sure. K2RIW listening for anyone with any information on electrolytic capacitors. Okay. And there's two things you got to worry about.
Check the connection to 25 is down for the moment.
Okay. You're right. I went and listened to 975-375, and I'm not there. I guess I should stand by for a little while, Eric. K2EJ, K2IW.
Okay, now you can repeat what you said on the last thing. You'll hear it.
Okay, I'm hearing myself with delay. So I'll repeat that last statement because the link was not there. You have to put some amount of voltage on electrolytic capacitors. If it's a 450 volt rated capacitor and nobody's putting any voltage on it for 10 years, a couple of things can happen. One, it can dry out and never come back to life. Let's hope that doesn't happen. And number two, the forming of the plates, which haven't had any high voltage on them for a long time, could have degraded. If you then hit them with the full 450 volts immediately, you might get some internal arcing or damage or whatever. By putting some amount of voltage on them, say 50 volts, 100 volts, 150 volts, and leave it there for an hour or so, the plates become reformed, and after that it'll tolerate the full 450 volts if that's what the capacitor is rated for. So that's what I've heard people doing, and they seem to be successful when they do it most of the time, Steve. K2HUC, K2LIW in the TechNet. DBZ with a comment. Okay, the link is now working in one direction. I can hear myself coming out of 975-375. However, I was hearing beautifully Steve on 375 coming out and 975 going in, but the link in the other direction wasn't working. He wasn't coming out of 85, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Give me another second. Let me see what's going on.
Okay, we'll stand by.
I try him out there.
Roger, Dodger. Okay, I'm listening to myself with some delay coming out of 375. And Steve, give us a couple of words again on 375. Let's see if we're hearing you back in the other direction. 82, HUC, K2RIW. I'm hearing you beautifully coming out of 375. Unfortunately, you're not coming out of 85. So Eric is still working on that. Out of curiosity, Steve, if you wanted to transmit on 2585, although your signal might be a little bit noisy, do you have the ability to do that? KD2HUC, K2RIW.
For some reason, and maybe Eric would be able to tell me why, I no longer have the ability to hear the 825 repeater from where I am. One of the previous TechNets about, I don't know, I want to say maybe 2 to 3 weeks ago, he did something and all of a sudden all the noise and everything went away and it was clear as day, and tonight it's back to noise. So, I mean, I can try, but there's a good chance I won't be able to hear you.
So I think you're saying if you listen to 85, you hear nothing but noise. So in other words, you're hearing me strictly on 375, and you don't hear me on 85 at all. Is that what you're saying, Steve? Go ahead. Roger.
I think that'll do it. Are you reading me at all now?
I'm reading you beautifully with no tone. You sound good. Looks like Eric fixed it. So, if you have any further questions, now's the time to ask Steve. We're hearing you beautifully.
Dick, I think Hal had a comment also.
Okay. K6. Delta Papa Zulu. Go right ahead, Hal. K2RIW. But you formed a few capacitors in your time. When you heard Hal, which machine was it coming out of, Joe?
He was on A5.
Okay. Maybe I was listening on Reset 5 at the time. One last call. K6TPZ, if you're there. K2RAW.
I had a question just out of curiosity. What kind of altitude? Because some tubes don't like high voltage while their filaments are hitting them.
If I understand you correctly, if you're doing the right thing with a tube, you're supposed to run the filament long enough to get it up to full temperature before you apply high voltage to the tube. If I understand correctly, when the cathode is not fully heated, and you're asking the cathode to make emission, it somehow changes the chemistry of the cathode and can contaminate it. Is that roughly what happens, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RAW?
As the tube comes up to temperature, you actually wind up boiling the thorium that's in the cathode. It just boils right out of it.
And it doesn't boil out when the temperature is up to full. When the cathode's up to full temperature. That seems backwards from common sense. You would think the higher temperature would boil out the thorium, and you're saying partial temperature, when you ask for emission, it boils out the thorium. There must be some pretty fancy physics there, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RAW.
Yeah, well, it depends upon how you bring the tube up, whether or not you've got a, you know, if it's a triode, and the ground is triode, that's a definite no-no. If you've got a tetrode or a pentode, there's ways to get around that, right? You know, putting a negative voltage on the grid.
You could put a negative voltage on the grid of a triode also, although, in the case of a ground cathode, a grounded triode too, cathode driven, obviously it's very difficult without some kind of a fancy circuit. I know that in the case of a 4CX250B, when you're operating at full power at, say, 450 or 500 megahertz, you're supposed to lower the filament voltage because the cathode receives extra heating because of back bombardment. And so a person who follows that suggestion would, when he's in a long standby, have only partially heated cathode. So I wonder if a really smart person would have to be switching the filament voltage depending on whether or not the 4CX250B is in the active transmitting mode or the standby mode if you want to avoid this problem. I've never heard anyone requiring that up till now. KE2EJ, K2RAW.
KQRWKQK. Well, all the broadcasts that I've ever worked on, they, you know, the high voltage power supply comes on immediately, but there's a relay that sends the high voltage to the plane. We have tubes that are designed to actually have fast turn on, where the timer will run for 15 seconds before it applies the voltage to the plate. But generally, most of the transmitters will heat the filament for up to 2 minutes before it applies high voltage to the plate. And even at that point, when you put high voltage on the plate, you've got no drive, so you're not actually drawing any capless current. So, and then you bring it up nicely. That's kind of the way all the commercial stuff was.
You said you've got no drive, and therefore you're not asking for emission. That sounds like it's Class C service. I would assume that back in the days of analog television, you ran those tubes in Class A. I would guess you're running Class A service, in which case, even without drive, the tube is drawing a current, I think. Over to you, Eric.
Yeah, well, a TV transmitter is generally tetrodes and above. During the turn-on period of the 4GX24000, the plate voltage doesn't come up until after the filament voltage does, and what they'll do is they'll actually put a blocking voltage on the suppressor grid until the high voltage comes up, and then the screen grid, and then they start to bring the current up on the screen grid until you get to the correct bias level.
Okay, that makes sense. Do you realize, Eric, that the, and your repair of the linking tonight, at first you had the internet linking with the delay and some feedback, and now the last embodiment that you made, the last couple of transmissions that Steve made on 975-375, he came through beautifully on A5 without the 1KC note. No delay, and the 1KC note is gone. You fixed it. I wonder if you're aware that you fixed it. And KE2EJ, KQRIW.
Actually, Dick, I started going out of the A5 machine. But since I can't get the audio, I'm listening to you via Echo Link, just transmitting on 25.
Okay. I had a misimpression. Sorry about that, Eric. Okay. Anybody else wants to tell us anything? Do so right now. K2RIW if you're listening.
I have a question for Eric. This amplifier doesn't have any means for allowing the cathode to heat up before the high voltage is turned on. Even in standby mode, high voltage is still on the tube. So, and this is a commercially available amp, so what do you do? KD2HUC, back to net.
I'm kind of curious. I'm hearing your voice delayed in the background, and I'm wondering how that's happening. What's creating the delayed audio in your shack at this time, Steve? Go ahead.
That would be the audio coming out of my cell phone. Like I said, I can't hear on 85, so I'm listening to the receive via Echo Link and just transmitting on 85.
That makes sense. Okay, the cell phone has got all kinds of latency these days with all of its digital processing. Let's see if Eric's got some words for your question, if Eric is still with us. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. I'm not saying you can't run a tube like that, but you're not going to get the kind of life that you would get out of it if you're nicer to it. But what kind of tubes are they, by the way? I mean, if it's a cathode-less tube, then I wouldn't care about it much.
It is a 3500Z.
That's a trier, isn't it?